Well, many years ago, my late aunt, Dr. Shafika Caregula, began to study extrasensory perception. She was on the cutting edge. We'll talk with Nick Begich about that in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we're with Nick Begich, whose website is earthpulse.com, and you can see all his work, one of his latest also. You can DVD out, Mind Control, Nick?
Yeah, we've got the Mind Control DVD and the book Controlling the Human Mind, which is really the subject of tonight's discussion, and a lot of other materials up there. There's on the Mind Effects section of the website, there's actually hundreds of pages of previously classified defense intelligence reports and other reports on the subject of this hour, extrasensory perception and the paranormal, or what they called in those days, paraphysics. It's interesting when you start to look historically at what's happened in these areas, and then you put it on the backdrop of where technology has gone in the intervening, 40, 50 years, literally, these days.
What do you think got the CIA interested in doing mind control experiments?
Well, my personal opinion is it goes back. There was a lot of interest in some of the things that were coming out of the hypnotherapy labs at Harvard back in the 20s and 30s that started to get people's attention. The idea of creating that super spy was actually, that whole concept was hatched in the mid-late 20s by a guy named Estabrooks, who developed a number of techniques in this area. Eventually, he perfected it, said in his later years he acknowledged that he'd actually done it, where they'd put someone or some number of people in these deep states of hypnosis, and then over a 10-month period literally gave them new identities so they could send them in. They could function, and if they were captured, they'd have absolutely no recollection of their other self until they were extracted and they were debriefed. And the thing about all that is you never really put people back together again, when you do this. And what they learned in that led to a lot of other things. But the big change, I think, in our government's focus was after the Korean War, when we had our prisoners of war returning, these young men that had been so patriotic coming back and then handing out communist leaflets on street corners. And at that time in the early 50s, the phrase brainwashing made it into the popular vernacular. And that was based on sort of that observation and a lot more interest in sort of how to mold or condition the mind. And that started a lot of activities through the 50s. In the early 60s, they looked at a lot of other things, and they were experimenting with hallucinogenics, LSD, telepathine, ketamine, number of other hallucinogenics to see what effects they would have on people. And at the same time, they were studying, everybody that ever had an anomalous human capability, whether they were super learners or expressed some telepathic capacity or super meditation ability. They began to look at the brain and see what was going on there and whether or not they could stimulate this in others. And that really started, I think, in the 50s more so than any other period, and continues even to this day.
Did you ever read any of the work of my aunt, Shafika?
I don't recall it, but I've read so much material. I mean, when you look at what we've done, I mean, in the book that you've been reading, it's, 300 sources, I think we cited there.
Yeah.
But I don't remember that, no, actually. But all of the research, when you look at it, it was consistently replicated, and the Soviets were involved in a lot of this. And, in fact, you might remember this book. It was Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain by Ostrander and Schroeder. It was a big deal back in the early 70s. They were allowed in and could poke around in some of the Eastern Bloc countries, and they came back with stories of what they called eyeless sight, as an example. The Lazenov method of super learning for languages came out of that. Several things where the mind was being stretched or tested in ways that didn't fit what we thought the mind was all about. And as I think science developed a greater understanding, this idea of consciousness and what that might entail and what else might be possible becomes more pronounced in the literature. And yet you see very little, except, usually 20, 30 years after things finally get declassified, and even the documents get declassified, at least in the U.S., are highly redacted.
Well, the aunt was talking about and doing heavy research, Nick, back in the 60s, in the 70s, on mind control.
Right.
And she was also doing ESP and telepathy.
Right.
And then died mysteriously in a tub where a radio fell in, of all things.
Well, that's highly suspect. You know, one of the really interesting people on this subject was Elizabeth Rauscher and her late husband, Bill Bice, who had done some experiments in telepathic communication back in the 80s. And I read their paper. It was never published, you know, for peer review or anything, but it was a very interesting study. They had about, I think it was 9 test subjects. These people had no experience with any kind of telepathic communication. And what they did is hook one person up to an apparatus that monitored what was going on in their brain and transferred that to a person in another room where they could then read what was on their mind. And the way they used to test this was with the standard cards they use for psychics, you know, with the triangles and the squares and the squiggly lines and so on. And they had 100% hit rate with 9 people with no experience. And so what they demonstrated in the lab was essentially that it is a measurable and it can be transmitted wirelessly in such a way as you can reconfigure the information and understand it. And knowing that was done in 1985, and here we are, you know, 23 years later, the technology hasn't gotten worse. It's gotten better. And the ability to model perhaps is getting to the point where full transfers of information can happen in much different ways. And as a result, I think we need a real serious discussion. Now, the Economist had a cover story back in 2002, May 25th, 2002. It was called, the cover story was Mind Control. And it was a guy with a compass on it, or a safe on his head. And you think about it, and it was discussing the ethics of all of this, because as this technology has evolved, great questions as to what do we do to regulate? Because right now there are no regulations. And this, I think, is perhaps one of the most important areas of science for what it offers mankind, but at the same time, its abuse potential is extraordinary. And there's enough in the open literature now to say, hey, we need a national discussion about this technology on the backdrop of personal privacy and what that means for liberty in the 21st century, because it's a whole different world in terms of how our technologies impact what we are as human beings, and now even fundamentally, perhaps even the way we think.
Well, Nick, with ESP and our ability to have this extrasensory perception,
yeah,
and tune people up, you know, all of us have had these abilities. Strange things happen to us where we are very perceptive. We just need to train ourselves to realize it when it happens.
Right. And here's the thing. In that conference I mentioned, one of the folks that raised this issue was Alexander Kavarain, and that actually breaks down the math. The other was Rosalie Bertell, who's in her, I got to guess she's in her late 70s, but she's been at this a long time. She used to teach mathematics to PhD students at Berkeley in biological sciences, and she's a very brilliant person. Has a long history of working with radiological issues internationally. And her suggestion was that this is the next evolution of human consciousness, that these perceptions, these capabilities are what's coming to us as sort of a natural attribute of our humanity. Another person that I've been working with, a friend of mine, we're actually going to publish his work on ESP, Enhancing Your Potentials, Richard Allen Miller's work. And what he's done and had done early on in the 70s, he was working for the Mankind Research Organization, which we talk about in our book. He was their Northwest Field Director, and one of his projects was to train 4,000 servicemen and women to enhance their intuition. And they did some pre-testing and then post-testing, and they were able to do this by like an average of 400%, you know, right guessing. And, you know, when you think about all of that, the idea that, you know, this it's really a matter of exercise, of understanding how the brain's operating and creating an environment where it operates more efficiently. And this is where the discoveries in some of the techniques for enhancing human performance have developed. In the old days, you spent 20 years learning how to meditate. And today you can learn the same thing with techniques in as little as a month. So I think the technologies that are here now that are becoming more widespread are actually offering opportunities to open some of this up. And telepathy as a concept, I mean, think about telepathy. On one level, I think we do this. People say it's body language. I think it's more subtle than that, how we actually communicate. But imagine if the day arrived where that spontaneously was a possibility for all of us. Sure would make government honest in a hurry, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it sure would. Last week, our guest, who's been on the program with us, Rupert Sheldrake, was wounded when he was stabbed in the leg in Santa Fe. Were you there?
I was there. I was at the same conference.
Did you see the guy, the person who stabbed him?
No, I didn't see that individual. Actually, I had left. I just had breakfast with Rupert and a cup of coffee in the morning, and he was off to do his, get ready for his lecture, and we actually left early. I went down to see Richard Hoagland and Robin. So I spent that day with them. We got the call while we were down there, and it was somebody hearing voices, apparently. And, you know, this is not unusual.
And that's why I bring this up. I mean, Rupert was there to talk about mind and consciousness.
Yes.
This other guy who's whacked out is hearing these voices in his head.
Right. And actually, Rupert was at the point of discussing this very topic of telepathy. And he was talking about a technique of gazing in one another person's eyes. And I've used this also in my presentations, only in a different context. When you gaze in someone's eyes, particularly if it's someone that you're in love with, what happens is your brains begin to synchronize. They begin to follow in a way that they actually are resonating with a higher frequency of correlation, where things are matching out, if you will. It's almost like a frequency-following response, if you will. What it does is it means that, you know, when you're in harmony, when you're in resonance, two or more gathered together, I mean, all these basic kind of concepts that come through so many different ways actually has a physical counterpart. And in this particular case, that's what he was lecturing on, was this idea of gazing and then being able to appreciate the other person's awareness, maybe even very specifically in terms of the telepathic communication. And I think that's an interesting concept. You know, and people have all experienced, I think, at some level, some unusual, anomalous communication. I give you mine from Germany, if I can.
Sure.
I traveled to Germany, you know, once or twice a year for many years, and I don't speak German, never took a German class, and I'll interact with my friends from time to time, and they're speaking German, and I can somehow perceive it. And I always chalked it up to body language and just being around them a lot and that kind of thing. And then I was relaying this to friends of mine in Switzerland, and then we were all driving, and we got a flat. And everybody's talking about the flat. And I interject, no, don't use a pocket knife. You'll just break the blade. They all stopped and looked at me and said, how did you know we were talking about that? I said, you're speaking English. I said, no, we're speaking German. But I heard every word in English. I didn't hear any German. And it was the most unusual.
That's weird.
Yeah, very unusual. But I thought about it. You know, it made me think about this underlying level of communication that actually is taking place. The words maybe are some kind of carrier that we identify with, but perhaps communication happens at a much deeper level. And I think that's probably true.
Well, there's no doubt. You've got that ability to break down communication and decipher it.
Yeah, and I've seen, you know, some things that are pretty compelling in this area in my lifetime. And then when I see my friends, I mean, Alex Kabiranian is probably, as I said, one of the most brilliant biophysicists on the planet. And his formulations and his consideration of all of this is based on over 50 years of real serious work. And when I think about it, I think that's maybe that's, you know, Judgment Day. I mean, could you imagine if we had that capability, whether it was augmented by some synthetic capacity, whether it be something like a telephone, you know, or what have you? I mean, they're talking about handheld lie detectors, right? I mean, we're talking about the ultimate question mark is
exactly
should we, because we can, and if we do, what should we think about this? And whether it's natural or augmented by man, who should decide? And these are all big questions that are not in some far-off next generation's decision matrix. They're in ours. And I think this administration, particularly as we look at what's coming politically in the country, we have, you know, I think this generation, this next couple of elections are going to be critical to where our technology takes us. And it has the potential to free us to incredible potentials, or the opposite, to enslave us in a way that limits what we're capable of. I mean, just the agitation, the fear and worry of the economy, the news, how it comes at you, the advertisements of smelling bad, tasting bad, I mean, whatever they're telling you as negative messages, being hit with this sort of underlying worry keeps us as a population from reaching our higher potentials, because they require a slower, more deliberate type of consciousness that cannot exist in that environment. And so it's important to sort of gain an understanding of what's out there and then understand how it's impacting us so that we can start to do something about it that is more constructive than destructive. And that's the mind. Ultimately, it's about our minds and how we use them and apply them in creating whatever we create in this reality. And these technologies interfere without fully informed consent and understanding of what it entails. I think we are at a very important time, a crossroads, where these technologies need to be recognized and then regulated properly.
Nick, they're making a population of road ragers. They're turning everybody inside and out. I can't tell you, since we were just talking about this, how many people have sent me special fast blast messages saying you're absolutely right. That, you know, this constant threat, this constant keeping people on edge is backfiring.
Yeah, I think it is, because people are going, wait a minute, you know, we want to think about us. We want solutions that affect individuals in a positive way. I mean, I think about what is the biggest, you know, we look at across the country at some of the big problems facing us, education, and you look at the crisis in education. And yet we have technologies today that can solve much of the crisis in education. We have to rethink how we do it. We need new models for an old system. But when you look at some of the breakthroughs that have been made for enhancing brain performance that aren't even applied in most school districts, or if they're used, they're used in such a limited way. Neurobiofeedback, which I know you've talked about with other guests and something we've covered in the past, one of the most exciting areas, in only 40 school districts out of 15,000 in the country use it. And they can use it for attention deficit disorder. They can use it for hyperactivity to train children to get into this ideal state of learning, this zone, this alpha range of real creative intellectual possibilities. And they can learn how to do this in about 30 to 40 sessions of an hour apiece. And they don't need Ritalin anymore. They don't need the psychoactive drugs anymore. But more importantly, or as important at least, is the fact the same technology can be applied to average learners or accelerated learners and enhance their potentials as well. And we're not applying technology in the ways that we truly could within learning environments. And I think that's a huge mistake, because it costs us a fortune if you look at school budgets around the country. And yet they're delivering, in my opinion, less and less as the decades move on, when the technology should allow us to do more and more.
Tell me a little bit about electronic telepathy and enhancing true ESP.
Well, and this is, again, sort of the stimulation of the brain. And there's been some things that have been done to stimulate brain performance. Synthetic telepathy, what I spoke about earlier about Bill Bice and Elizabeth Rauscher's experiments in the 1980s, you know, the idea that you can recreate that. And when you think about telepathy, and I mentioned it before, it's kind of like becomes Judgment Day. I mean, if everyone suddenly gained that capability, you have to be pretty self-forgiving, because we all have a lot in our histories just as human beings. And then you have to be forgiving of everyone else, which would be a pretty big jump. And some people probably couldn't handle that very well. But you think about it, this is going to happen in terms of the transparency of the individual mind is only based upon our ability to break down the calculations and interpret them precisely, and we are very close to that.
More to come with Nick Begich in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll open up the phone lines with Nick Begich. We've got Nick for 2.5 more hours. In the last hour of the program, though, I want to open up the lines for those of you to share your ESP stories with us. Next hour, just questions for Nick, and we'll be back with a little bit more on Coast to Coast AM. And we're back with Nick Begich. Nick, what do you mean by brain mapping?
You know, the idea of looking at what is actually happening in real time with the brain, and then on a more fine level is this idea of being able to look at really complete brain function in real time. And the idea eventually is that if you can monitor what's going on and you can map it correctly, then you can take and recreate signals that will duplicate that in another individual. And that's that whole idea of transferring states of consciousness, literally by measuring one person's in real time, determining what's going on, and then trying to impose that on another. And that's part of this direction in this technology that's emerging. And when you think about that, you know, there may be all kinds of good reasons to map the brain. I mean, you think about brain injuries and the things, the science around sort of rewiring the brain and getting the brain to function differently and kind of overcome physical damage. You know, that's one aspect of it. The idea of functioning in a better way. When you think about attention deficit disorder children, oftentimes it's not what we think it is. It can be a lot of other things. Food allergies are one. Normal childhood is another at a certain point.
Exactly.
But when we really have these things, the idea of slowing a child down or speeding a child up in terms of their brain function, this can be learned just the same as exercising a muscle on the body. And biofeedback can provide that vehicle. It's also used for addictive behaviors. It's used for a lot of different therapies and for just enhancing performance. When you think about the left and the right brain arguments, you know, the idea of the creative and the analytical and how we deal with young children, you know, often we end up typesetting them in such a way that little girls end up developing more creative attributes and intuitive attributes, that side of the brain, and little boys tend to be more analytical. And that's what it used to be. It's not so much that anymore. Now we kind of do it all sort of the wrong way equally. But the idea that both hemispheres need to work together, and there are technologies that enhance that, so the creative and the intellectual work together. And most people that I've met that are really brilliant, I'm sure some of the brighter people will say, the best things didn't happen in sort of this constructed analytical way. It was those leaps of intuition. That was the more valuable attribute. And that's why I say, and I think I said it in the earlier segment, is all of us, every person on the planet has that as a starting point,
Absolutely. Which
is pretty remarkable.
It is remarkable. We just have to train ourselves to really perform.
Right.
How can you do that?
Well, there's several things. I mean, there's all the old techniques of reducing stress that allow for more coherent thinking, whether it's breathing techniques or certain disciplines. Almost every religion, every philosophy ties together some sense of slowing the mind or stilling the mind so that you can do some real work. There's also now technologies that can assist in this. There's light and sound devices, there's electrocranial stimulation, there's binaural beat or bioral beat that was developed by Munro. And Munro, incidentally, was the guy that sort of pioneered for most lay people this whole OBE or out-of-body.
Sure. Robert, you're talking about Robert Munro, right?
Right. Right. And he developed the hemisync systems and the patents that went along with that back, geez, it was I think back in the 70s when those original patents were beginning to evolve. And what they did is they used sound to create a whole brain effect where both hemispheres began to work together so that you really amplified your possibilities. And they did it in two ways. One was with just sound and tones that put you in that general state. And then they would overlay voiceovers in some of the tracks, not all of them. Some were voice layovers, but they weren't subliminal. So you could actually hear what the heck people were saying to you, which is extremely important. Subliminals, if you can't hear them, could set up conflicts within your own, you know, way you shape and frame your reality in terms of word symbols. So I kind of like that. But more importantly, what he discovered was that these various tonal arrangements could stimulate various parts of the brain and cause these kind of anomalous sort of experiences. And the same was true with light and sound devices. As they evolved, people reported heightened intuition. They reported lots of different things that weren't so much related to the device as related to their own consciousness. The device just was sort of a catalyst for stimulating something within the mind, within the brain, physically, that, you know, cause some changes. Persinger did this too. Persinger at Laurentian University used magnetic solenoids in a big helmet. It looks kind of a strange operation. He was on a program on CBC with me, where he had his deal where you could see the solenoids. And what he did is he created in people that had no previous experience in this area, the out-of-body experience, the abduction experience, and a lot of other of these anomalous experiences by essentially firing these magnetic solenoids and stimulating the brain in various ways. But all of this, when you start to look at it, whether it's electronically stimulated or in the earlier CIA programs, drug-induced, but they began to observe these unusual capabilities. They couldn't explain them in terms of the known physics. And yet, as you look at sort of how all this is evolving, and then you look at the current protocols, I mean, the Navy just initiated a new set of rules in 2006 for on page 9 of these new set of rules, it gives you the rules for mind control experiments. So the stuff's never ended. I mean, there's an open RFP of the Air Force looking for new methods for controlling behavior using techniques that capitalize on electromagnetic field effects. And so these things haven't gone away. They've just become more and more sophisticated on the backdrop of higher technologies, totally unregulated once again, and a big enough concern for governments to start being a little bit alarmed. And you know, we pushed the issue of mind-altering technologies back when we were first dealing with the HARP issue. And in 97, actually 98 and 99 is when we did our biggest work in the European Parliament. In 99, we actually got a resolution that addressed some of this, this idea of manipulating human beings. And it was in the context of the most important security and disarmament resolution the European Parliament ever passed. And it was a resolution A40005/99. And we had demonstrated an infrasound device, a device that would transfer sound, you know, so you could hear that proverbial voice in the head. Mm-hmm. And since that time, you know, of course, Woody Norris developed a wireless version of this, and he won the MIT Lemelson Prize a few years ago in 2005.
But I think he's also making a flying car.
Yeah, he may be. He's a really good
guy. I think
it is.
Yeah, he is. Okay.
And he is, as far as I know, a pretty good guy. In this technology, you know, it's an interesting one, this idea of projection of sound, but how it could be used and the various ways it can be used do concern a lot of folks. In this case, the European Parliament passed a resolution, and this is what it says in one line. It calls for an international convention introducing a global ban on all developments and deployments of weapons which might enable any form of manipulation of human beings, unquote.
Well, they haven't told us that because we've got one.
Right. And here we are, you know, and I think it's important, it would be very important to see some U.S. legislation along the same line. And more importantly, maybe more disclosure about the technologies and a more open discussion. And unfortunately, there's a real shortage of technically informed folks within our legislative branch of government, because it's most of this is so new, and the people with real power in the Congress are the most senior with the least experience, perhaps in real terms, of some of the technologies that are surrounding us. They have to rely on experts in closed meetings for much of the classified discussions on technology. And I think we are missing something in this, in that we are not getting a fully accountable bureaucracy developing technologies that really change the dimension of personal privacy in this century.
Do you believe that we are being manipulated right now on a worldwide basis in some form or fashion?
You know, in an overt way, absolutely. In fact, what we just said about fear and how fear works on consciousness and on our ability to make decisions and be moved as a population rather than being directed on our own accord as a group of free-thinking individuals, I think we see that in the way that national propaganda is developed by every country. It's basically using fear. I mean, I don't care whether you're the minister in the pulpit using fear to motivate the congregation or the government, it's not much different. But as a motivator, it doesn't last very long. And that's what I think everyone comes to realize, is real motivation has to come from the inside out and be intrinsic to what we're looking for. And I think in the long run, we're defeated by this. Just in terms of what it does, if you analyze the brain under an EEG and you can see clearly what happens, and it can be so simple, and in most cases it is. And I think that's what a lot of us lose sight of, is it's in the calm light of day that our best decisions are made, because that's how we're intended to operate, not in a constant state of agitation. Even if you look at the technology that surrounds us, and most people will recognize that that sense of exhaling, if you will, your whole body relaxes when the power grid goes out. It's not just how quiet it is, but your whole body kind of exhales. And it's because you're no longer compensating for those electromagnetic fields that surround us all the time. Now, the idea that you can oscillate a signal on any one of those carriers that are creating that underlying stress that can deliver a lot more. And this is written up in a paper, well quoted, The Mind Has No Firewalls. We quoted the first time back in 99. It was published, I believe, in 98 or 99, U.S. Army War College. And it was a discussion of a Russian military journal article called Orienteer, on the idea that you could use radio, TV, internet, the power grid itself could be modulated in such a way as to influence the behavior over anyone in close proximity to that signal. And when you think about information warfare in the 21st century and where that goes, it's going to be more than just hacking through your systems to steal your identity. It can be as subtle as carrying a signal that influences general behaviors. In fact, the Morrises, who were aired on the same CBC Canadian Broadcasting special as I was, were folks that were involved in the early discussions in the Reagan-Bush era of Star Wars weapons and some of these exotic weapons, and they reported on what they saw in the Soviet Union. And essentially, the technology had been around for at least now over a decade, that you could, in fact, embed these signals through the Internet, through any of these systems. And so the only question for them was, you know, when has it been done and who's doing it? And the same thing they said, the other thing, important thing they said, is because these are known carriers, the way these signals come in, you could build a microcircuit that would screen them out of every electronic device, so you wouldn't have the threat of it. And yet we don't hear any discussion about that. We hear the opposite kinds of discussions.
Nick, do you believe that there's an ongoing program now to try to control and manipulate us? Publicity did not stop them?
I think so. I think so on a lot of levels, because they keep getting caught. You know, but do you remember there was a total surveillance program of the Pentagon at one time? That was the name of it. There was a program where they wanted to use really track you from cradle to grave. In fact, I think it was one of our major policy makers within the bureaucracy was making the comment that, you know, the Social Security number does a lot of that for us already. But when you look at sort of the total surveillance society, we really already have it. When you look at all of your financial transactions, all your electronic transactions, all of this is easily monitored. And in fact, all your financial transactions can be monitored under CINFIN, which is set up by the federal government back in the late 90s to look at financial transactions. So they can look at your whole profile from every wire transfer, bank account, everything that you have that's electronically stored having to do with your financial data can be quickly ascertained. Yep. And even interfered with. And this is technology that's been around quite a long time, as an example.
Well, one day they're going to push the button and lock us all out, huh?
Well, you know, it's not so far out. I mean, think about what would that do? You know, in terms of modern warfare, it's different than what it used to be because of all these technologies. You know, the idea that you could wage a literal covert war against your own population or against someone else, and you have to identify these technologies in order to build safeguards and initiate them. And I think the temptation is just huge. That's again why the discussion I think needs to take place. When we produced meeting last year, we made all the video free, so people can go to like the Lay Institute site and see for free all the video that we produced, which was each of our presenters, and several of them talked about this area of sort of the next leap in human evolution. So well worth looking at, and the idea that consciousness, the idea of the mind. I mean, I think about all the great things that have happened, and I thank God for creative thinkers. I mean, go back to 1900 or around that time, and every scientist in the world was saying, heavier than aircraft can't fly, and then a couple of bicycle makers who didn't know it figured out a way to make it happen. And, you know, the most brilliant things, Apple computers, you know, guys in the garage, you know, figuring out how to do it. Didn't take a UNIVAC, didn't fill up a house, You know, each thing that really makes leaps happen because people pursue what they know to not be impossible. In other words, your belief drives you. You know, Henry Ford in the V8, he wasn't an engineer, and every engineer he talked to said he couldn't make one, and he did it anyway. You know, Edison in just pure raw perseverance, 1,000 tries to get a light bulb, or the brilliance of Tesla, first time, every time, you know, made in the mind.
Yes.
Before he designed the hardware. But all of that genius came sort of out of the blue. And that's where I feel that at this time, when we're seeing these technologies develop, it's the entire populace. I mean, we're meant, I think, to reach a higher state of potential. Maybe that's what we're all here to do. You know, in my view, I think that is. And if we can stimulate our own individual highest potential in those and others, then maybe we can accomplish some pretty great things. And that's how I think things started in this country. Now we have technologies that can even help us do this, and they're being abused for the same tempting reasons that abuse has always occurred for the last 200 years since the country's founding.
Greed, Nick.
Exactly right, you know, and we even created new creatures. You know, the corporation, the thing that lives on forever, has the same rights as us in the courtroom, yet doesn't have a living soul, but it's motivated by its lifeblood, which is Main Street's sacrifice for Wall Street. And there's a balance in all of this, and I think that's where the average person, again, is saying, wait a minute, this is a country that's composed of individuals, which mean when we talk about the mind and what's possible there, this is what we have to safeguard in this century so that we can continue to have the kind of possibility that we dreamed about over 200 years ago. You know, things that Jefferson thought about, if he had even vaguely, any of the founding fathers had thought that they could control human thinking processes, that would have been the First Amendment, to exclude that from any tampering.
I wonder what they'd all say right about now if they were living right about now.
It would be interesting. You know, my father passed away when he was 40, when he was in the Congress. That was in the 70s.
And I think that was the plane crash.
Right. And I think back on his time and just how much has changed. I mean, and he was so stunned by all of the breakthroughs in technology. My grandfather lived into his 90s, so I had a lot of good discussion, you know, understanding how his perception of things had changed. And yet today, the acceleration pace of change is so much more rapid. I mean, in the old days, it was, you know, you'd get some theory, and by the time it came out, product would be 50 years, you know, and then it went, invention started really accelerating, and invention in the 80s was like doubling every five years. That's from the invention of the wheel to where they were in technology. Today, it's like every 9 to 10 months and accelerating. How do we even keep up? And that's where this evolution in the way we think and how we utilize the minds that we have, the quantum computers, literally, that we each have, I think that's the challenge for this century. And there are things emerging where we don't want to see them covered under a cloak of secrecy. We want them open, disclosed, and we want serious discussions so that misuse is avoided and the things that can really help us at this time in our history might actually unfold. And I think we're there now. We could do that now.
When we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines, questions for Nick Begich, and then in the final hour, we want your ESP stories. How have you been able to use extrasensory perception? Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.